What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Musial, and let's say it, a first place edition of Meet Me at Musial. I'm your host, Daniel Shoftoff from C70 at the Bat, at Twitter at C70. With me, Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily, a Medlock One. We're recording this just moments after the Cubs have lost to the Diamondbacks. The Cardinals now tied for first, maybe even percentage points ahead. I haven't looked at that particularly. They do have one more win than the Cubs. So, Alan, you know, I never go back and listen to our shows, and that's probably understandable for anybody that actually listens to these things. But, you know, I'm pretty sure that last week we were not talking about how excited we were about this team. I mean, we were sitting here after they had lost the first game to Cincinnati and lost 2 out of 3 to Milwaukee. And we're just saying, hey, you know, bring up the kids, play out the string. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. They haven't lost since then. Maybe we should have waited to do a show. This is incredible.
I thought last Friday was the low point of the show, of our shows. Because it was one of those where you could kind of tell that we were resigned to the fact that, okay, they are what they are. You know, they're not going to pick it up. This is, you know, you go to Cincinnati, but Cincinnati probably beat them 2 out of 3 and probably beat them bad. And that was kind of it. Well, whatever happened. Whoever struck a nerve, and it has just been a different team. And it is, it makes you feel really good because now the pitching has been so. The starting pitching has been so good, and you and I have talked about this, that it's really going to suck that they're going to waste this performance of all the starters, to where now they're really backing these guys up. And, you know, a 2 or 3 run lead never feels safe, or a deficit never feels – you never feel like you're buried.
Yeah.
And Rosenthal's become a weapon, and then the offense have come around, and, you know, it's the perfect storm right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this, and I mean, except the first win in this streak was a 4-1 win. After that, we've got a week full of cheap drinks. You know, I don't know that there's been a month full of cheap drinks.
Oh, yeah.
In this thing. But, and not only, I mean, and this isn't, well, you know, tonight was a downer. They only scored 6. You know, for 6 straight games, they scored 8 runs, which is something this franchise has never done. Had 3 straight games where there were double digits. You know, you had 3 grand slams in 1 week. And there was a cat. You know, this has been... it's like they condensed all the good stuff they could do and shoved it into 1 week. And to see it is kind of crazy. Now, look, let's be honest. I mean, 8 in a row is insane. Really. They could win tomorrow. I mean, it's the Braves, and I don't think they've been terribly impressed with the pitching of the Braves, although the hitting of the Braves has been a little bit better than we'd like. If they lose tomorrow, they lose tomorrow. But right now, this stretch has pushed them right back into a real race. And, you know, we talked about the Cubs having an easier August. The Cardinals' August is not... it's not easy. I mean, you got 2 games with Boston coming up. You still got a set with the Rays coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that. It's not terribly hard. I mean, you got 3 with the Padres. You got 4 with the Pirates, which is going to be a tough one probably too. So this next run. But you look at what they did to Kansas City. And Kansas City, a team that may have its flaws, but they're right in their race. And the Cardinals went out and, you know, kind of handed it to them. You know, had to rally a couple times. But, you know, putting up, you know, 11, 10, 8, 8. it's just, it's almost lost for words to see how this team is coming together. Now, you and I were talking a little bit before the show, and you really pointed to that the dinner that this team had while they were in Cincinnati, and I don't know if that was Friday night or maybe even Saturday night. Might have even been Thursday night before the series started. I don't know, but it seems.
I heard it was after the game Friday night.
After Friday night.
That's what I heard it was after the game Friday night.
That, yeah, and that makes sense. You know, maybe talk a little about it. I know you wanted to talk about that, but it does sound like that might have been a turning point.
Well, and it was funny because I didn't really think too much about it. I just thought they were probably just tired of getting drilled by Cincinnati. But Derek Gould talked about it this week, and he said that, did you notice that the handshake changed? Now they're doing the interlocking hands. Have you noticed that at all? Yeah. It's easy to tell. Instead of throwing the grenade now, they're doing the interlocking hands. I guess that was a symbolism deal for unity, and it was a Wainwright idea. What Gould said was that whatever meeting they had, what sparked it was Pham's comments about not being good enough, not being fast enough, and not having enough power. They just weren't a very good team. It's funny because that kind of echoed the sentiments that Jericho said the night before. And I guess it all came into place at one time. And what, reading between the lines, and I think Jesus Ortiz is going to have an article about it tomorrow as well. Because even in a question, I noticed that he asked a question last night, and I can't remember who it was. I think it may have even been Lynn. No, it was Carpenter. He asked Carpenter a question about it last night, and then he asked Matheny today after the game in the presser about coming together. And they're trying to get facts out of it. So his Twitter feed tonight said that he had an article coming out along those lines. But whatever it is it's, I've heard that all grievances were aired and they all laid it out on the table at that point. You know, whatever narrative it is, I mean, everybody's kind of looking for something that was a spark, and maybe that's what it was. They're definitely a different team. Everything that they've wanted to achieve for the season, they're achieving it in odd ways. I mean, the lineup's not what they thought it was going to be, but they're still doing the things. They're getting on base. They have the big hits. They're really capitalizing on mistakes, and they're stealing bases, and they're being aggressive. One thing that's kind of gotten overlooked too is the dinner may have meant a lot, but the fact that Fowler's come back and hit the way he has will make up for a lot of negative play as well. You know, him being added back into that middle of the lineup, he's hit well. He, Wong, and Grichuk are really driving the train right now, and I don't know if that's a flash in the pan. I mean, I think that they may be hitting career norms, and this could be a pretty fun ride.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Mo not bringing in a big bat at the trading deadline. Apparently he did, because, you know, with Dexter Fowler getting off the DL, that's just as good as a trade. And apparently he's a cleanup hitter now. So we traded in leadoff Fowler for cleanup Fowler, and it seems to have worked. It's just remarkable. And, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, about a week or so ago, maybe it was during the Brewer series, and I started writing down in my blog post, I was trying to keep up with, you know, this race for 82 wins. And so what would they have to do to get to 82 wins? And we started it, and they had to play at basically a 90-win clip the rest of the way to get to 82 wins. I didn't factor on them playing at a 162-0 clip the rest of the way. It's just, you know, we've talked negatively about this team for a lot this year, because there's been a lot of things to talk negatively about. I'm not saying that was not valid at the time, but it makes this team feels so much different than that team that we've seen. Now, you know, like I said, it could be just a fluke. It's part of me. I'm very excited about this, and I think this has differences, obviously, to that 7-0 streak that they had earlier in the year, where they, you know, went to Miami and they went to Atlanta and they won 7 and they were in first place, and then it all fell apart the next 3 weeks. I think this team is different than that team. I think that there are reasons to be optimistic. The biggest reason is the fact that Trevor Rosenthal is back in the closer role, and I know there were issues tonight.
Exactly.
But that's not all his fault. if Matt Carpenter could do that little, you know, that little crazy. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to pick up, but if you catch the ball, you get an out. And if Mike Carpenter could have done that, and I don't want to. I know that everybody was immediately jumping on Carpenter's defense. I watched him last night because I was at the ball game last night, as anybody that followed my Twitter account knows. Carpenter looked all right at first. I mean, he had that nice double play in the first. I think that he's not a Gold Glover up there. And obviously he should have made that play. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that's necessarily a full indictment of his skill set either. I mean, things happen. But, you know, if a Gold Glover drops that ball, he gets a little bit more credit or a little bit more of a pass than Matt Carpenter, who is not. So, but you know, if Carpenter catches that ball, the Cardinals win what, 6-3, most likely, and we're not all walking on eggshells. But Trevor Rosenthal has been, I mean, that has to be the key. I mean, I know O is pitched better because they tend to leave him away from lefties, and as long as Brett Cecil stays in the bullpen, everybody's happy. But it does. I mean, having that end of the game locked down, and then some guys that could go along with that. I mean, we haven't seen Matt Bowman that much this week. I mean, he's not been overused. We're getting some really good bullpen pieces, and that feels big. That you could get those 3, 4, 5 runs, take that 1 to 2 run lead if you need it, and not be terribly concerned that it's going to go away in the next inning.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you're dead on. The Rosenthal taking over that closer role and thriving has settled the roles for everyone else. Now, I know that there's still some question marks about where O and Cecil are going to fit in. Cecil, when he's good, is great. Yeah, that's the thing that's amazing to me about it, is there on his run, he was unreal there for a little while. And now he's kind of getting beat up a little bit. So they'll have to figure that out. But then you have the safety net in Zach Duke. So that kind of balances out. I agree with you on O. Yeah, he's looked a lot better, but you could just kind of tell last night's matchup wasn't favorable to him. Or with Moss in the...
2 days
ago. 2 days ago. You just kind of... You knew that wasn't very... It just didn't line up very well. So they're going to have to find spots for him to throw. You know, they're not going to give up on him, and I hope they don't. So there's going to be some tense moments on those. But that has stabilized. With the back end of the bullpen becoming so much better, stabilizing those four. I mean, they got 12 outs twice in the Royal Series and looked great. And, you know, with their starting pitching, it's definitely a positive. I mean, I'm just so glad that we can finally say that they're actually living up to the expectations of the starting pitching, because it's just carried them all year, and now they're kind of backing them up a little bit to where they're not having to go eight innings every night, and they pitch well. I mean, after the first inning tonight, I thought Martinez pitched really well. And that's just – and actually that first inning, I mean, there were a lot of ground balls, exactly what you want to get, you know, and one or two of them just, you know, had eyes. So I don't know. I think that everything's kind of coming together at the right time.
Yeah, it feels like it. I will – point out, I just saw on Twitter that the Cubs have a 1 point advantage in the percentage points, so they are, you know, we're tied for first, but everybody knows that, but that is the percentage points. Let's talk a little bit about Brett Cecil. I know we got a lot of positive things. Let's hit on a couple of negative things. You're right, Brett Cecil, he had a terrible start. He had a good run. It seems like he slipped back. Let's look at these ERAs for the month. I mean, ERAs, take them what they're worth out of relievers, but 4.5, 4.5, 2.84, 2.53 in July, 10.5 in 6 innings in August. Now, again, that's 7 earned runs. 4 of those came in the game against the Braves. I think the more interesting thing is you start looking at the OPS against 728 in April, 1.029 in May. Then June, 479 OPS against him in June. That's insane. Then July, it's back up to 867, and now August, 914. I don't know. He had it going for a while, but now he doesn't. it doesn't feel like it, at least. And maybe some of those games get out. I mean, to be fair, I mean, we look at that. Yeah, the three innings against Cincinnati where he was scoreless. It's just these last two outings have been so bad. What do you do with him? I mean, is it – because, I mean, that's what they – you run him out there even with a big lead, and it suddenly is no longer a big lead.
Yeah, and it's weird. Somebody will be able to point this out. A lot of these innings seem to be he gets two quick outs and even two quick strikes on somebody, and then everything falls apart. Yeah. So I'm just not sure if it's his finishing pitches or what's going on, but he seems like he's in control up until the last till that last out. So I don't know. I don't know. They'll keep throwing him into situations to try to succeed, and man, he makes him so much better when he's great. I know that sounds ignorant, mm-hmm. but it's just a different bullpen, and you know he was one of the guys that said, "Hey, now that we're now finding our roles."
Yeah.
So there's got to be a comfort level for him as well. So I don't know. I can't really pin it down, but that's just – it's really funny. It just seems like it's just the finishing pitches, the finishing outs that he struggles to get.
Yeah, his OPS, again, since the All-Star break is 1.031, and that's not good. And a 750 ERA. And again, some of that is really skewing. I mean, if you look at the games played, you know, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 – I'll count that one. 5, 6, 7 of those outings, he didn't allow a run. Although one of those outings, he didn't get anybody out either. He just kind of got bailed out. but you factor in, you know, those numbers, as bad as they are, would be even worse without that three-inning stand against the Reds, where he basically didn't allow, you know, three hits but nothing else. You know, a lot of people on Twitter last night, you know, immediately jumping on the cutting DFA. You can't do that. I mean, it's a 4-year contract for $30 million. You can argue if that was a crazy contract, and maybe it was, probably was, but you don't cut somebody in the first year of a 4-year deal like that.
Yeah.
You know, Tara Wellman and I did a Periscope last night, and somebody suggested that the Red Sox cut Pablo Sandoval, and they did, but you know, not in the first year of the contract. I don't know if it's the last year of his contract or not. He may have another year, I don't know, but he definitely wasn't in the first year of it, and Boston can afford that kind of thing. I know,
sure.
You know, we'll talk finances, and you can argue that the Cardinals can afford that, and they probably could. They might be able to, but it's really gonna, you can't just do that, and that's a reactionary move. You got to, besides the fact that it's a bad look for an organization to cut a guy in the middle of a 4-year deal, I mean, anyway, so, but if you can't throw, I mean, you have to throw in these games like yesterday and just hope it works out. And you got to hope he doesn't face any lefties. Now, this is the crazy thing. And Alan, maybe you could, yeah, I doubt you can, but I'm going to throw it and make you explain it to me. Why do we have so many lefties that can't get lefties out? I mean, we got two that can and two that can't.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it is a their bullpen is made up so odd, and I don't know. It's a great question. I like having that lefty that can get those big left-handed bats out. There's no doubt about it. I like having it in there. I do think that gets overblown a little bit, you know, in times. So I kind of like to have those multi-inning guys as well. But it is funny how the splits on some of them are so bizarre that they never get those guys out. And I wonder if it's just, you know, a focus factor or the hitters focusing so much more. And, you know, what they're – like maybe Cecil flies open, you know what I mean? And the left-hander can see it a little bit more because that's on the, on you know, batter side. I don't know. But it's a great question. The Seager's deal, what was funny was everybody knew those splits except Matheny.
Yeah.
That's the one that always bothered me. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at this. Kevin Seager's this year, or not Kevin Seager's, Brett Cecil this year, lefties have a 932 OPS against him. And they're hitting 333. You know, that's not good. Kevin Seager's, let's pull his splits up here. Lefties only 781. Actually, he's doing better against lefties this year than he is against righties. That's a little, I mean, And it's, I mean, I guess it's probably reasonable. 781's not terrible. He's given up one home run to lefties in 50 at bats. I guess his numbers this year aren't as bad. It's still not great, and not what you'd like to see out of a guy that's coming in just to get lefties out. And then there's Sungwon Oh, who's not a lefty, but also can't get lefties out.
Yeah.
You know, his OPS against this year 1.056, and that's where you're talking about. A couple of days ago, facing Brandon Moss. I mean, he has no business facing a lefty that has power. 6 doubles, 7 home runs in less than 100 at bats. I mean, there's just no way right now that he should face a lefty, and yet Mike Matheny left him out there against a lefty in a huge situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's and that I do believe is visualization. You know, with his pitches, I mean, he's all based on movement around the plate, and he's just getting rocked. And I worried about that whole scenario. The one thing that I was thinking is I was so used to Moss getting himself out so many times when he would elevate the ball. But he did what he did, and we got lucky that it did 6 inches, you know, lower. You know, he hit 6 inches on the line, basically. So I don't know. That's the one thing that kind of worries me is game for game, it's going to be so important that we know they're not going to win out. But they're right in the thick of things now. And then these one-game swings are going to make such a difference. When are you going to kind of stretch these guys out? You know, that's a concern for me now, being in the last, 7 weeks of the season.
Let's talk about good lefties. Let's talk about Zach Duke.
Mm.
I think we've talked about him some already, but the idea that he would come back from Tommy John is pretty impressive. But he has not missed a step. I mean, there's not been much of an adjustment. He's come right back in and been that shutdown guy.
I think he's been better this year than he was last year.
He well may have been. I would, without looking at it, that's. I mean, I don't know where this team would be, especially this week without him.
Yeah, last night was huge. Those were four huge outs, and was it last night or the night before? I'm sorry, I'm running everything. Now I'm running on playoff lack of sleep. But yeah, that's another one. I mean, just think where they would be if they'd be in trouble without him, because then Cecil would be getting all those appearances. And, as of right now, he probably wouldn't be very successful in those. So yeah, Duke's been a lifesaver.
It's been incredible to have that, and that's kind of solidified as well. I mean, we talked about Rosenthal picking up that role, but having a guy like Duke that can come in and just really be that hammer that you need at times, and getting in. And again, and of course, patron pitcher of the blog, Tyler Lyons. Joe Schwartz wrote a nice article about what he's looked like over the last few weeks. When we watched that in that Cincinnati game, what was that on? That was Saturday after we recorded last. He just came in and just, I mean, obliterated the three Reds that he faced, including Joey Votto. I mean, they didn't see any of that stuff. It's been fun. But one guy we're not seeing it, and Tara and I mentioned this some last night, and I'll talk to you about it. One guy, I think he's been, I'm not even sure. It kind of stands to reason that we're having this discussion, because I'm not even sure where he's at now. It's Sam Tuilevallah. It feels like Sam has done everything he can do to be a part of this team. And yet, we still don't see him in any kind of, we don't see him much at all, but we definitely don't see him in huge situations. See, like I said, I had to go look it up. He is on the active roster.
Sure.
But, when was the last time he pitched? Let's look up his game log. He pitched on the 7th against Kansas City. He pitched, he's pitched twice this month. I guess he got called back up on the 4th. I think he got that one. So he's been up for a little over a week now and gotten an inning and a third out of this.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like he's a guy that they really need to use a little bit more, but so far he hasn't gained Matheny's trust for some reason.
No, I agree. And I was hoping that he would get that closing opportunity last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know they're keeping Bowman fresh. I mean, I, certainly he could use another day's rest. I mean, he did. He got the job done, and, you know, if I was pulling the trigger, they probably get beat. I don't know. But I thought last night would have been a perfect opportunity for Tuivasa. So I was surprised that he didn't even get up. And it's funny, I was so surprised that I did what you did. I actually looked and was like, hey, was there a move made that I didn't know about? Because his name was never brought up, and I thought it would have been a perfect opportunity for him. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's a gain trust factor, and I don't know what they don't like, you know, in him. You know, he's been successful this year. I know that, you know, his first few times up were not. So I don't know. It's a good question. It still seems like they're playing with a short bullpen when they're not using some of these guys now. You know, not to nitpick, but, you know, these spots are going to be coveted. And everybody's going to be needed. I mean, it's in the dog days, and you know, I think he needs to get another shot of, you know, at more important innings.
It feels like it, and I mean, again, he's not going to be around next year. If you're not, well, I mean, he's got to be around next year. So the thing is, he has no options. That's why, I guess, is what I'm trying to boil out. You can't send him back to Memphis next year and let him ride the shuttle. Somebody else is going to have to do that, and so it'd be a good idea to know what you've got. He's closed in the minors. He's done a very good job for a Memphis team that's insane right now. You know, something like 36 games over 500 or whatever as they continue to click. He's done a great job there. He's done fairly well in the big leagues. I really don't know what else he has to do. And hopefully we'll see some. Maybe, you know, Trevor Rosenthal threw, what, 26, 27 pitches tonight?
Yeah.
You'd like to think, although there is a day off Monday, being that he pitched, what, 3 days in a row, or before last night, got the last night off, you'd like to think that they'd rest him tomorrow. And so maybe Tuivasa can get some innings there. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. Carlos Martinez pitches tonight, like you said earlier, gave up the two runs, and it feels like that's the thing with Carlos. It's just that first inning is so big. He just, I don't know, is he just not getting settled in? I think somebody's probably looked at this, I think Zach Gifford maybe, I don't quite remember, but it's just so, I think that's what's keeping him from being that real ace that we think he should be.
Yeah, because when he settles in, he's tough. Now, I really thought that, I thought he'd kind of turned a corner there in Kansas City whenever he held them down in that first inning. And I was like, okay, good, now we're kind of over that hump. Well, tonight I was like, here we go again. But, I mean, all three of those balls that were really hit, I mean, they were all seeing eye. You know, that's the thing. When I look back at it, I was like, well, that's just kind of – that can kind of be some bad luck. You know, one was a positioning deal with Wong where he was up the middle because the runner was on first. And you know, but it's still – it's so easy to point at that because that's been the issue, you know, all his – the whole second half of the season, those first inning starts where he blows up. And just like in, you know, the Nationals, the game with Washington – they scored those first runs in the first inning, and you're looking at Scherzer, and you might as well just pack it up. You know, one of those things where I think eventually Martinez is going to get to that point to where if the Cardinals score runs in the first inning, that the other team's in trouble. You know, the tide will kind of turn on one of those things. I think that's what we expect out of Martinez, is the Scherzer type. And hopefully we'll get there. But, yeah, right now it doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's frustrating because I really thought that he would be nails tonight from the beginning, and they would really be able to put it on them. I mean, here we are writing them off next week, and I'm nitpicking them this week. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Some of us just can never be happy, but you're right. I mean, I've always said this. If they get in, they're dangerous because of him. I'm hesitant to say that as much as I can now because he doesn't finish off that first inning so strong, but he's real close to being elite, so it's tough to be down on him.
Yeah, and I mean, if we've seen so much good out of him, and you're right, it's just the fact that if he's matched up against one of those big guys in a playoff game, you can't.
Margin of error is just so low. Yeah.
You can't get down because you're not likely to come back. I mean, if Max Scherzer could throw 7-8 innings and, you know, hold up a 2-run lead or something like that. I mean, that's the way these guys go. So, and that's what Carlos Martinez very well may be in the future. He may be the guy that if you get, you know, if he's on the mound and the Cardinals score a run or two early, then the game's over. I'd like to think that's what's going to happen for him, but he's not there yet. So it is a little scary, but let's not worry too much about where they might be in the playoffs just yet, I guess. Maybe we should just enjoy the ride we got. I don't know. I mean, I'm not picking on you. I'm saying for everybody. We kind of look at this. We've just kind of got to enjoy. This is a week of baseball that we may not see again for a long time. To take a team that's gone, that was, what, 4.5 out and really looking like it was dead, to, you know, first place in 8 days is just amazing.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of fun now. And the doors have been left open for them. I mean, we know that, but at least they're taking advantage of it. So it's man, it's a ride. It's fun. I mean, it brings back memories that you don't want to bring up, but you know, it's eerily reminiscent.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. So, Braves tomorrow, Boston this week, Pirates this week. I mean, what are you looking at? What do we look at this with this stuff?
In six. I mean, on these road trips, I always feel like if you can come home 500 on the road trip, that I think that you've done a good job to go into those situations.
Right.
Boston will be tough for two, and that's one of those where I hate the two-game series because it's a crapshoot, you know, and then it can put you in a tailspin. The Pirates make me nervous. That's the one thing, is I think they're getting overlooked a little bit, but they've kind of come back down to earth after playing so well for their week and a half or whatnot, to where they've lost two out of, you know, their last three. But they're one of those that, with Gerrit Cole, that I'm afraid that they could really catch fire. Now, they haven't yet. So, you know, you look at that, and the last game of that series is in Williamsport. It's always, you know, you just never know what you're going to get in those kind of games. I hate the Sunday night games, and in an atmosphere like that will be interesting. Then you get the Padres and Rays. You got to expect to win both those series. I know Tampa Bay is good, but at home you got to kind of protect that. You know, the make or break trip that I've looked at, and we had talked about this on the show, is the 10 gamer. Where eight of them are split between San Francisco and San Diego.
Yeah,
and I know both of those teams are down, but the West Coast trips are tough. That's why I thought that the Cardinals got the luck of the draw this week by having Kansas City and Atlanta. And I know Kansas City's in the hunt, but then you get the Braves, who are kind of flailing. They're kind of running out of gas, that we expected them to do. Where the Cubs went on the West Coast. And, you know, you and I were talking. You were like, well, what do you expect? I said, well, the Cubs have to be happy to walk away from there 3-3. You're elated if you walk away 4-2, and you're on top of the world if you do any better than that. And not because San Francisco's tough, but if San Francisco, exactly what they did, they stole game two, and then, you know, Bumgarner comes back and does his thing, and it actually, the Giants didn't score any runs for him. If they would have, it wouldn't have been that close. But you do that, and then they come back, and the Cubs win their second game last night, and now they've got to basically be 3-3 on this trip, or they could be in a little bit of trouble. So the West Coast trips always make me nervous, especially when it's kind of bookended by the two games in Milwaukee before you leave West. Is one of those that I hope they just don't beat the heck out of each other and then go West and then get into a tailspin. You know, that's one of the things I'm a little concerned about, because you keep your head above water, then you turn around and in September you have all the head-to-head games.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to think if you can get past that, you're in the thick of this.
Yeah, I mean, at this rate, and again, you're right, that trip's bad. Then you get the Reds, you get six more with the Reds in September. I mean, that lasts from September 15th on, when you've got seven games against the Cubs, three games against the Reds, three games against the Pirates, three games against the Brewers. You know, I mean, you finished the season, well, September 8th on is all NL Central. And as tight as this is, that's where the division likely is decided. And that's crazy to think, but that could be some raw out of scoreboard watching at that point in time.
Sure.
So, you're right. This is, I mean, you go into Boston this week. I mean, it's hard to expect to do. I mean, you'd like to split, I think.
Yeah.
Especially if you win tomorrow and you're going in with a 9-game winning streak. I mean, double-digit winning streaks just don't happen all that often unless you're the Dodgers, apparently. So you split in there. If you could win the series against Pittsburgh, that's great. But even if you split that, if you could split the road trip, it's not too bad. I think we could be happy with that. But we'll see how it goes, I guess. That's still interesting to see. What else out of this week, I mean, has struck your eye? I mean, it's just been, I guess we can talk about the fact that Lance Lynn has the hardest head in baseball.
Oh, wow, that's impressive. That just shows you, I love Lynn, and it's one of those where he was the type, you know, my dad was a huge Nolan Ryan, my dad was a huge pitching fan, mm-hmm. and he was a big Nolan Ryan guy, and that, Lynn reminds me of, like, Nolan, just tough.
Yeah.
You know, one of those guys that goes out and battles, you know what you're going to get, and then you see that, and you're just like, man, I'm so glad he didn't get traded. You know, one of those situations, and it's just, I don't know, he it's crazy. That's a known commodity that I think, out of that, we'll get in, we probably don't want to get into that, but that's a known commodity that I think you have to have on a staff like this. Mm. And, yeah, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and possibly the best post-game interview that he's ever done.
Yeah.
That's saying something from Lance Lynn, but when it includes the phrase, I stared into their eyes and told them to go back to the... Well, I stared into their soul and told them to go back into the dugout or something like that.
He probably said something along those lines.
He did. That's exactly...
He probably did.
No, yeah, he probably said, just get out of there. And he was funny. I saw him laughing on the mound when he was trying to... trying to convince him he was fine, and he must have done just a glancing shot. If may have the hat probably absorbed most of it, apparently, but as he was trying to tell the cat. But you're right. I mean, there is that argument for signing him. It does make it difficult, I think, and it's hard to know how you juggle that, especially going forward. But you're right, to have a guy that's a 6 or 7 inning guy that's going to give you a quality start pretty much every time out. I mean, of course, you know, how much is that worth? How much can you afford to do that?
Sure.
You know, and we talk a big game about wanting change on this roster until it comes down to some of the players that we want that can be changed, and then we try to keep them. So I don't know. What do you think? And this was a discussion that kind of came up this week as well, as the Cardinals are taking this run on at the division. What kind of lessons are the club front office going to take from this? Is this 2 months, even if they do wind up with a division win, going to be enough for the club to decide to kind of stay the course, thinking it's good enough? Or are the first 4 months still going to take precedence? Are they going to make a lot of changes, even if things go well?
I don't know. I don't know if it would be a lot of changes, but I think there are changes coming. Just due to not only we do have the hot streak, and yeah, everything is starting to fall into place. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do think Mozeliak looks really good because he never panicked and shot off and made a deal. You know, one of those things. But he even said they were lacking that middle of the order bat in the minor leagues, and they're missing it on the roster as well. I think Aledmys Diaz, that situation will probably make them hesitant to crowning DeJong as the next middle of the order bat. Where they improve though, I don't know. I mean, because to me, and I was looking at the numbers, and you could see it on the eye test, Wong has taken that next step. Mm-hmm. You know, that he's a good player. I mean, he's one of those that he'll challenge for an all-star spot next year.
Yeah.
He's probably played his legs off right now, but he hadn't been an everyday player in 3 years. I think he'll be all right. And like you and I talked about, I thought it was more injury than anything, and now it kind of proves that may be it, you know, because whenever they ran for him in Cincinnati that night, I was like, you know what, don't tell us that it's just he's tired and needs a day here and there, and then you're running for him. It sounds like there may be something more to that, and I'm wondering if that wasn't it. you know, it's funny. Gould this week had another. He had another. Another. It may have been the same interview. I don't know. And he said that for them to improve, this is the way that they would do it. Molina will be your catcher. Carpenter will be your first baseman. Fowler will be your center fielder. Any of those other positions, you can look to upgrade. Which I thought was kind of funny. And I, because I just wondered, I'm like, well, at this point, I think Pham's played his way in to getting a shot next year. I think Grichik's close. And then you still have to figure out what you have to do with Piscotty. That leaves Wong. I think you can upgrade at shortstop. And I think Jericho may stay at third. I would like to go see them sign like Rusty Groffel. He had an article this week about what he thinks they could do. One was sign J.D. Martinez and sign Zach Cozart. Cozart is one that I would like to see because I would like to see DeJong play that role that they expected out of Grichik, to be an everyday bat but not have an everyday position. You know, one of those situations. I would kind of like to see that. And we know that he has experience at three spots on the infield already. You know, people, you know, right now he's pie in the sky. You know, people don't want to hear that. But I think you have to build in for some regression because you almost got burned with Diaz this year. You know, no one thought he would, everybody thought he would regress. No one would thought he would tank that bad. But, you know, he's still one of the team leaders in extra base hits, even after all this, even after this barrage of offense is coming. So, you know, he's going to have to fit into the plans next year or be dealt. So it could be interesting. I think they're going to upgrade. I think that it may have halted the major overhaul that Gersh mentioned on the 40-man roster. But I think just finding spots for these guys, too, is going to have to make change on that roster as well. So that may be some of it. But, you know, it's easy to say now that there's not going to be a lot. In 2 weeks, we may say, hey, you know, that we had their run that made for the summer. Let's see what they can do. I still think they're missing a bat. Everybody's hot right now. I don't think that the big bat that they think is on the roster. So I think that's one of those other positions that they're going to be able to upgrade with, but I just don't know where. And it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it with the outfield situation that they have and then the pitching situation that they have. They can deal from a strength. So, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they position themselves at the winter meetings to see how they can improve. It may be out of the box. You never know. I mean, they're going to build on pitching, and it makes me think they may start building more on defense too. So, I don't know. That, you know, Cozart could go a long way in that, but that's obvious. That may be too easy, you know. So, it'll be interesting the offseason regardless.
It's interesting. I'd have to look at Rusty's argument on Cozart because I'm looking at his numbers, and he's having a great year this year, but it's so out of line with the rest of his career. You know, he's never hit more than 258 in any other year. You know, his OPS, highest OPS is 769, and then this year it's 989. You know, he's got some pop, obviously. Doesn't strike out just a ton, but just it feels like, especially if you look at Zach Cozart this year and you go pay for this year, which is what he's going to want.
Yeah.
And then you wind up with Zach Cozart that you're used to, and I know he's got a pretty good glove, and there's value to him. Don't get me wrong, but I have a feeling somebody's going to overpay for him, and I'm not sure that.
Well, yeah. Go that way. And I thought that would be the situation. This trade deadline was so weird because of the lack of position players that got moved. You know, I know we talked about that last week. And I think that hurt his market with the fact that anybody that was willing to make those moves and could already had a shortstop. Because I thought somebody would overpay for him at the deadline. So it will be interesting to see how they do it. I've got a really good friend who's a big Cincinnati Reds fan. What's amazing to me is how much they waste that offense. Their offense is good, and they have zero pitching. They have a great closer, but they don't have anything else. And it's just so funny. And I asked him, I said, do you ever get angry that you have that offense that is so good and so tough to get people out and then to waste it with the pitching? He said, it all came down to that Homer Bailey contract. He said it ruined it to bring anybody else in, and now they're hamstrung by it. And I was like, you know, that's completely makes sense. He told me next time he runs into me, he's going to give me an earful of what's wrong with him. Because to me, Hamilton's a tough out. You know, when they had Cozart hitting second, he's a tough out. Votto's a stud. He's forgotten about in Cincinnati a lot. You know, and I think that I think Duvall can play. I think their right fielder, I'm drawing a blank, the S last name, I think he can play. Shive, yeah, they're pretty good. And you just wonder, and then, you know, their second and third baseman, the guys that just came up, both of those guys are having decent years. Now, Mesoraco is probably never going to reach his potential after the concussions. But, you know, their offense is not bad. Their pitching is just awful. And you're just like, man, they had a couple of pretty decent arms. If they had a Lance Lynn, they'd be pretty dangerous. So, you know, it's just funny how fickle these things are. You know, just one player here or there, they can make such a difference.
Yeah, and they had a decent look at some arms, but, you know, I've had some injury problems. DeScalini or whatever seems to have been hurt for a while and maybe out. I don't know, he may be out for the year now. And stuff like that set him back. But, but it's difficult. And it's difficult to grow Pete Pritchard in that organization as well.
Yeah.
It feels like. So they've had some tries at it and just haven't necessarily panned out. Let's talk a little bit about Jed Jerko. You know, he didn't play tonight. Greg Garcia started. It feels like, and it's not quite as much because I'm looking at his game log, it's not quite that way, but it almost feels like he and Garcia have some sort of weird platoon going. I mean, it's not a platoon because they both hit from the right same side, but, you know, Jerko had the 2 days off, but then the beginning of this week, you know, Cincinnati game on Sunday, the Royals game on Monday. He then played, that was Thursday night's game. He came in late. He didn't start. And then again tonight, he didn't start. So that's, you know, four or so games this week that he hasn't started.
How much internet connection did you have today on the way home?
Since I was driving, I didn't try any.
Okay, well, the reason I say that is he was in the lineup tonight.
Oh, okay.
And it came in as a late scratch. And it was funny because Gould broke the news, and he just comes out and says, "Hey, Jerko's a scratch. Details coming." And I was like, "Wait a second, that doesn't sound injury." So there for a minute, I was a little worried about it. And about 20 minutes later, then they finally came out and said he was removed due to swelling of the right knee. Mm. And I was like, "Okay, well that makes sense because I've thought that he was hurt this whole time. That's why I said that. I thought you knew that earlier." Mm. So he was a late scratch. But the funny thing about it is Dan, in the broadcast tonight, mentioned that he said, well, since they're kind of doing the pseudo-platoon between he and Garcia.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that, and I was like, you know, it kind of has been that way the last 2 weeks. But I do think it's more injury. I think he's kind of fighting some lower – well, obviously that's why they benched him tonight. Mm-hmm. But I think that he's fighting some lower body discomfort. The interesting thing is that Diaz played third tonight in Memphis. So I wonder if that wouldn't be the call-up if Jerko were to go on the 10-day.
It might be. And I know you wrote about Diaz earlier. I think Doug Volt Voigt over at our site did as well. I know at one time, and I haven't double-checked. I'll double-check it now, but Diaz was starting to hit a little bit. It probably would be. I'm not sure who else you could bring up, another outfielder.
Well, Wisdom does have 24 homers, and I just wonder. Now, I will tell you, my computer is frozen up, so I can't check. I don't know is Wisdom on the 40-man.
I do not believe so.
I don't think so. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I think you'd have to add him, and you know, we've talked about Wisdom before. Actually, Diaz has slowed down a little bit. Last 10 games, he's hitting .242 with two homers and six RBIs. That does not include tonight's game, but, you know, he actually, let's see, had a bit of a hitless streak so far. So he is kind of, you know, I think it was last week we were talking about how he was really looking like he was starting to come around, and maybe it slipped a little bit more. Because, I mean, you know, see, on his time in Memphis this year, he's hitting .255, four homers, 19 RBIs. Still not walking. I mean, he's been down there 27 games, and he's walked four times. And I think that's the biggest thing that the Cardinals really wanted, I would think, it was the biggest thing they wanted him to work on, was getting that eye back.
Yeah, it's disappointing to me because I knew that they wouldn't rush him back by the way that it happened for that very reason that he lost this year. It's weird that he lost his ability to adjust. Last year he adjusted on the fly so well. That's what made me think he was going to be a mainstay. I was like, man, he improves at bat for at bat. And it just seemed like he was pressing and seemed like he could never really get out of it. So it's a little disappointing to me because I was really hoping he'd have a big year because I thought he may be one of those guys that, you know, I'm kind of bullish on the Cuban players. Now, I know the pipeline's not what it used to be, but his situation to get here and the way that they signed him made me think that he was such a valuable commodity that even after the removal of the 40-man, that took the risk of no one getting him and him coming back, and then all of a sudden, then it just catches fire. That would be the motivation that it took to get him up and running. So it's disappointing right now that it's that situation. I do like that they're going to try him at other positions. I was wondering about that because in my article I thought, well, if they're only going to play him at shortstop down there, he's not going to come up here and play second or third. But if they're willing to move him, then DeYoung can play short, and then you could fill in the pieces around there. I wish that place discipline would somehow return. Because, I mean, I still think he's a lethal bat. I think he's a good base runner, and I think he hustles. And I wish there was a spot for him, but he's kind of playing his way out of it. So it's frustrating.
Yeah, it is. And I hate to see that, but you're right. Patrick Wisdom is not on the 40-man, by the way. Okay. So, and we've talked about Wisdom before. He might be a nice bat to occasionally, but he's not going to be an answer. So, yeah, I could see them doing that. I could see them. I mean, we saw it. Seen a lot of times where the minor league numbers don't necessarily matter for the call up of a veteran, and Diaz might fit in that situation. I don't know. I think you're probably right though. If he went on the DL, I think they'd bring up Diaz. I mean, I guess they could bring up Mejia again and see if he could slide over there or be that guy to take over Greg Garcia's spot and let Garcia play all the time. But I think Diaz would probably be the option if that's the case. And it may, you know, maybe the Turco de Bon need the DL stint and just need a day or two off. But kind of sounded like that's a possibility. Shoot, I had an idea. I lost it. That happens. It's been a long couple of days.
No, I'm sure. Yeah, you're kind of road weary.
Yeah, and I guess it wasn't important. We'll just go on to do something else. I know what it was. It was that it talked about the minors. We'll talk about this week, and I don't. We didn't. It's happened this week, I think. I don't think we talked about it last week. The demotion of Stephen Piscotty. That was this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was right before the Kansas City series.
Yeah. Right.
So that would have been Monday.
Yeah. So Piscotty goes down with Dexter Fowler activated. A lot of people surprised about that just because of his contract, because of some of the ways that management has done things in the past. But I think it just goes to show how much they really think Piscotty needs to get right. You know, first at bat down in Memphis, he hits a home run, so, you know, who knows how long it'll take him. But I know you've been kind of, I don't want to, critical, a little bit down on Piscotty this year. I mean, what were you thinking when they sent him down?
I was glad, because I was afraid that wasn't going to be a move they were willing to make. He needs it. I don't think it's any different from Grichuk or Diaz to go down and get your legs back underneath you. I know that he's going through some trying times. I mean, that's always going to be a reason for some of the decline. I say some of it because I felt like you could see this all year last year, and I felt like you could almost see it toward the end of 15. You know, because it was used as, hey, he's just not used to playing that many games. He's just tired, and we kind of saw it last year as well, and then we've seen it all this year. So I don't know. I think it's the right move because as much as people are going to always compare Piscotty to Grichuk, the one thing in my mind that Grichuk can do, you know, his strike zone judgment has gotten better, but it's still not great. He's not going to walk a lot, but boy, he puts a charge in a ball. And when he hits it, it's generally an extra base hit. Well, we didn't see that out of Piscotty. You know, Piscotty walked, but he lost all of his ability for extra base hits. You know, that's in playing in the corners, that's what you have to have. I mean, those are your primary spots. And I just thought that he needed to go down and they need to redirect him. And hopefully Badaska takes over and just runs with this, because I'm tired of hearing about the adjustments that Piscotty makes every year. And I'm hoping that he can become the hitter that he needs to do. And I understand that they were worried about his lack of power before he came up. Then he adjusted his swing. Then he started hitting homers. Then he did that. And then he tried to adjust his swing again to, you know, conserve energy. And then he tried to do it again this spring. And you're just like, you know, I hope they just stick with something and just run with it. While you have the stats up, and like I said, I can't look anything up right now. I don't know what's going on. Was his first game Friday night?
He has played in, real quick, let's see, I probably could tell it from up here. His first game was, the 10th. So that was okay. Thursday night, I guess.
Thursday night. All right. Well, then that was, because it was Monday whenever he got the, it was funny because he didn't report till the 10th.
Yeah. I don't know what that was about.
Well, I wonder if he didn't go to California.
That's possible.
Because I wondered about that, because whenever he hadn't reported, and somebody on Twitter had, it was either Gould or, it wasn't Langosh, because Langosh would have came out and said it, but it was one, somebody with the Post-Dispatch or somebody with the organization that came out and said that they didn't expect him to report until the 10th or the 11th, or it was actually Thursday or Friday. And I couldn't remember if he played Thursday or not, but I was thinking, well, that you could have caught a flight out of Kansas City and flew to California for, you know, and made that, you know, basically 1, 2, 3 nights. So I'm wondering if that wasn't the situation.
You know, I honestly think, again, this is a very difficult situation for Steven Piscotty, and I by no means want to downplay that. I could honestly see the organization dealing him in the off season to a team in California.
I agree. We talked about that
last week with the trade deadline when they made that offer for Sonny Gray. It just feels like, you know, obviously his mother's not going to get any better. It's a situation where ALS can be quick, it can be slow, but he might not have a whole lot of time with her. I would not be surprised if he hasn't at least told the front office he would be acceptable to that. And that's, you know, let's be honest, that's one way to solve a little bit of the thing. If they can find a good deal, you know, and it works for him. I don't think the Cardinals will give him, the Cardinals are going to trade him to Houston or someplace, you know, New York or anything like that. But Oakland, San Francisco, you know, places out there, sure. I think if there's a trade that works, that's what's going to happen.
That makes a ton of sense. I mean, it's, you know, and then you feel for him, you know, to battle that. And to me, that solves a lot of problems, and it kind of sounds selfish to even bring it up like that. But I could see that happening.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that's coming. I mean, it maybe won't. You know, it may be that, you know, she'll get better or stabilize enough that he'll feel fine playing in St. Louis for a few years. Because I think the organization is still on a whole high on him. I don't think that they want to ship him off. I don't think they're using him as a trade ship. But this would be really, yes, it'll help us, and no, we're not going to give him away to a California team. But if it can help us and help the player, then we'll do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Steven Piscotty, 2-for-9 in his two games down there. Again, not counting tonight. 1-for-5 in his opener. 1-for-4 yesterday. Like I said, home run, first time down there. Those magical waters of Memphis. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Send them down. They'll pop something. And we'll see how long that lasts and how long he lasts down there. I mean, that may be the interesting thing, too. I mean, you know, Steven Piscotty didn't have to be optioned. He could have been still on his rehab assignment because he wasn't hitting down the rehab.
It was not handled well. I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah, and I don't, I mean, it wasn't like they really had to have that, you know, that bad. I mean, there are times where you see guys go, I mean, like, go down and they go 0-4 or 0-8 or whatever, but they're established veterans. They've been hitting well on the year. They just need to see some live pitching, and then they'll be fine when they come up. But, you know, with Piscotty struggling anyway and being out for this time, it seems like if he's still struggling, you know, why only give him four games down in Springfield? And if he doesn't hit down there, why bring him up unless they're, you know, you're right. It just didn't feel like it was done right. And I feel like the front office is smarter than that, so I don't really know. Unless they thought he was going to give them that boost, but I don't know why they would have.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's it just did not make a lot of sense and really didn't put him give him the opportunity to succeed. And whenever he came up, he was taking no pitches at all. I mean, he was swinging at everything. And that is a complete lack of what Stephen Piscotty is. You know, that's why his pitch selection and his at-bats have been what's been intriguing. I mean, I've heard a right-handed Matt Carpenter. You know, we've never seen it to that level, but he's that selective. Well, he wasn't like that when he was here. I thought he was swinging a lot early. I thought he was rolling over on a bunch of stuff. And, you know, those are generally mechanical issues. And sometimes I think he outsmarts himself. You know, just like you and I were talking about, he's always doing that swing adjustment. And it's to the point now where you just kind of roll your eyes when you hear that. You're like, I just settle on something and, you know, let's figure this out. So I didn't think it'd put him in a chance to succeed, you know, especially when the whole team had sawdust on their hands because there was that much pressure going on to try to get something going. Put him in that situation, it almost was a setback for him. So he could have done that in a non-stressful situation down in Memphis or even worked his way up through three levels, or at least two, to get back, and you wouldn't have had to have sent him back down and save an option on that. So I don't think that matters for him. I mean, he's kind of a long-term guy maybe, but, you know, with his extension. But I just didn't think it was handled well and didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it seems like that even the front office has been scratching their head at points this year on some of the option type situations that they just didn't know what to do. And, you know, that's not really troublesome. I just think that was the whole state of the organization.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it's just not been a real great year for the front office at all.
Yeah.
I think at some degree. And, you know, I could get if he'd hit a home run or two and he thought, okay, we need that power bat back in there, and it didn't materialize. But he wasn't doing anything in Springfield. So I don't know. But we'll see. I kind of feel like I just don't see Piscotty coming back before rosters expand. Unless there's an injury or something, because I just don't think there's a spot for him right now. Obviously, with the team playing the way they are, they're not going to do anything. But that's also, 3 weeks, basically, from now?
Yeah.
And that's not unheard of. And they, you know, could even leave him down there longer and let him help Memphis win their championship, maybe. Which would be a really weird feeling, I think. Don't you?
yeah.
If you've been playing in the major leagues, and then you've even played in the major league playoffs, and then you're now helping Memphis win a title, it's like, you know, almost like playing with. I mean, I don't want to denigrate what Memphis is doing, because it's awesome for those guys. It's just, it's got to be different when you've been a star at the big league level to go back. You've been there for 3 weeks. It's not your championship.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. And I had never looked at it like that. But because I always think that everybody takes it as a, hey, it's a learning experience. Let's go to where I can get back. And, you know, I'm sure it's more of a, to him, it's like, oh, this sucks. You know, I mean, human nature would be to really be down on yourself. You know, I think Diaz was, and I'm sure he is a little bit too. So, yeah, that it would put you in a bizarre spot.
Yeah, it would be. But I just don't think he comes back up. And I think, you know, I think the team right now, the way we're seeing it, is the way they're going to roll with it for a while. I know, easy to say that when they're, you know, 8-0, but to see it, even after they slow down a little bit, I feel like this is probably the best we could see of this team.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, with that being said, I do think the guys are not only in the bullpen, but I think even their position players are starting to fall into place, as in mm-hmm. what is expected of them role-wise. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you can send Martinez down just because he fits that role of fourth outfielder slash pinch hitter really well, you know, and does a good job, and, you know, and can spot start, and, you know, he cleaned up for him, mm-hmm. you know, in Kansas City. And then you do that, and you roll the dice with Grichuk, and, you know, Grichuk has holes in his swing, but, you know, he's on one of his runs right now that you've got to keep him in the lineup. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that they've got the right combination right now. You know, even Voit has good at-bats in his role, and he doesn't, you know, he pinch hits, and, you know, he should get a spot start here and there, but it doesn't seem to happen. But Carpenter's played well, so, I mean, I get it. But, you know, they just seem to be clicking on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe a week from now we're talking about how it was a mirage and, you know, how could we believe this team was actually different and how they changed the stripes and all that stuff. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think that this team, not saying they're going to win the division, but it feels like they're going to be there. They're going to be in that race all the way. I don't, and you know, knock on wood and whatever, but I don't think they're going to stumble like they did earlier in the year. It feels, like I said, it just feels different now.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's a different team. And a lot of the things that we expected early in the season are starting to happen. So, you know, I don't know. I'm gonna try to enjoy it the most I can.
Yeah, and I think that's all you can do. I think we got to just live in the moment a little bit and be excited about the fact that this team is in first place. And it's a team that it may be flawed and have its issues, but right now it's winning, and that's all you can hope for, I guess. So, Alan, anything else you want to talk about from this week?
No, I was excited and liked getting this hour out.
Yep. Yep, it's been fun, and we'll do it again next week. I would love to be talking still about a first place club. If the Cubs would help out with that, we'd be fine with it. That would be great. But until then, I am Daniel, that's Alan, and we'll talk at you later.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!